talk to Leo to get his side of the situation, and we may have Lighthouse Linda LeMaster in the studio to give a different and broader perspective on the whole question of poverty pimping. Leo's getting the flack, but how many agencies around town are squeezing money out of people essentially to provide jobs for middle-class people, build buildings, contracts, and things of this sort, which doesn't really get to the people that it's supposed to get to. Whereas Leo's operation is a straight panhandling number, which goes door to door and gets money into the hands of some homeless people. You be the judge, which is a better approach. What is a better approach? We'll be discussing that probably around 11:30 today. We're also hoping to call Cornerstone Carol Denny of Berkeley, who I've often mentioned on this show. Carol is a very articulate activist, radio personality with Free Radio Berkeley. There's Lighthouse Linda peeking in. She'll be back later in the show. Carol Denny, as I said, is a person who is currently under assault by the University of California for her high-profile protesting work, all nonviolent, against the university's incursions at People's Park in Berkeley. University of California, for years, has been essentially attempting to, what would you say, shut down the south side, turn it into an alcove for their expansionist policies, and remove all low-income people in that area through hook or crook. That's how People's Park actually got started back in 1969. It was made in a place where previously there had been university housing, and the housing, which was low-income, it had been used by actually, it wasn't university, it was private housing. It had been used by students. The university got it torn down, and they left a hole there for 2 years, and the result was that people from the community decided to intervene and build a park, and thus People's Park began in 1969, and that became a classic confrontation as the authorities, including then-Governor Reagan, tried to close down that park. And they're still trying to do that, and Carol Denny herself reports that harassment against homeless people in Berkeley has stepped up. And she may have even done a sting operation this morning, which she would have gone out and put down her sleeping bag or sat down in somewhat ragged clothing in the park and waited to find if she were targeted by university or city police for the crime of being homeless in the open in a public park, which incidentally is also illegal here in Santa Cruz. In Santa Cruz, you cannot be in a park after dark. That's verboten, according to the Parks and Rec Department and its Führer Lebensraum Jim Lang, as I call him, who has been the bureaucrat in charge of that for almost a decade now. We've been fighting his regulations, his rules which allow people to be harassed nightly in the park if the police choose to do that, and harassed for doing nothing other than being there. So we may have Cornerstone Carol calling in with a report there, or actually we're going to try to call her. She's too poor to call us. Then we're going to have a report secondhand from Katzenjammer Keith McHenry, Food Not Bombs activist in San Francisco, who's planning another tour across the country in his van with his dog Pluto. He goes from town to town talking to local Food Not Bombs groups, talking to local underground radio stations, and passing on the word and hoping to set up communications, give advice, solidarity, all that good kind of stuff. And he's also pretty informed on the local San Francisco scene, the mayoral race up there in which Mayor Juggernaut Jordan, the author of probably the worst anti-homeless program in the nation, the Matrix program, has been going for 2 years, and Jordan is now choosing to run again for the mayorship, this time against Willie Brown, the darling of the tobacco lobby. It's going to be kind of a sad contest, and there are a number of other contestants, but from Keith's point of view, and I don't know how accurate it is, maybe we have some other commentators who have a sense of what's going on in the San Francisco scene. Keith sees it as a straight runoff between Brown and Jordan up in San Francisco. So we're going to have that report. I have my usual round of clippings, and I've been kind of trying to track down what's been happening with the curfew ordinance. I'm getting conflicting signals on that. And we may be talking to Catnip Kate Wells. Catnip Kate is a local attorney, one of the few who supports the rights of poor people, even if they don't have money to pay her, or even if it's not a politically correct cause. She's really jamming to get some work done today, and she was going to be on our show, and she was going to be our guest today on the air in the studio, but she's hustling to get a brief out for tomorrow, so we're going to have to forego the pleasure of having her here, but hopefully we'll be able to reach her on the phone briefly if we need an update, which Richard Quigley, who's kind of going to be standing in for her, can't give. Also, I'm going to be trying to be drumming up a bit of support for my own cause. As I did mention to you on Friday, I am going to be going to court this next Friday on August 11th. I will be going to court in San Francisco at 10:30 in the morning before a superior court, appellate division, who will be considering one of my appeals, actually my only appeal at the moment, appealing as I am. This appeal concerns the conspiracy to commit lunch charge, which I was convicted of and then sentenced to 2 months for in San Francisco. The actual arrest happened in October of 1993. The trial took place in February of 1994. And this case has been in the courts ever since. The appeals court considered it in March and then came back in June and said they wanted to hear it re-argued. So the re-argument will be happening on Friday in San Francisco at 633 Folsom Street. So any of you who are hot to follow the legal antics of the District Attorney of San Francisco and their attempt to close down San Francisco's Food Not Bombs should check out this appeals hearing. The appeals hearing will be, for me, Robert Norse Kahn, K-A-H-N. That's my legal name. That's the name under which this hearing is going to be held. There will be food served. There will be demonstration at the doors of the courthouse. And there may be police interference. The last time we had a small food serving, there was no interference from the San Francisco police. But since then, they've arrested hundreds and hundreds of people at the Mamiya Torchlight Parade, at the Food Not Bombs International Gathering, and at Food Not Bombs meals since the International Gathering of Food Not Bombs. Not as many as they have in the past month or two, compared with their incredible record in the last 6 or 7 years, but enough to total over 1,000 arrests for people serving free food, doing nothing else but serving free food in San Francisco. So I'm thinking of doing a caravan, and if people are interested in a caravan, I want you to give me a call either here at the studio at 427-3772 or at my home phone 423-HUFF. Or 423-4833. That's if you're interested in being involved in a caravan to San Francisco on Friday morning to attend this demonstration and hearing for me on the question of a 2-month jail sentence for serving bagels and rice in October of 1993 in front of the San Francisco City Hall, actually across the street from City Hall, at the Civic Center Plaza Park. That'll be happening on Friday, and I'd like to know if folks want to go up there. If you do, give me a call. Maybe we can get some kind of a caravan going. It is a bit late for that. And frankly, there's not going to be a dramatic development in the court itself. The Superior Court is notoriously slow. They took 3 months, well, they took 8 or 9 months to put this matter up for a hearing, and then when the hearing came up, they waited till the very last day, actually the day before the very last day or so, to give a decision. And that decision was, we want to hear it all again. And I'm going to go into some of the issues that are going to be considered by the court, or at least that my attorney, Bedrock David Beauvais, the battling barrister of Berkeley, will be arguing later in the program. So again, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM. You're listening to Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. And, my goodness, I forgot to mention it And here he is.
Nutcracker Nick.
Nutcracker Nick Whitehead, playwright and pundit and general pain in the butt.
Oh.
That's Nick. Nick here is going to MC and play the final act of his 1991-92, is it, reversion of Home Sweet Homeless, which we began almost 2 weeks ago.
Today we get the solution.
And today we get, if Nick can get close enough to the mic, we can get the solution to the whole question and, of course, a report on how things have changed in the last 3 years from Nutcracker Nick's perspective, if he will agree to that kind of a question. Nick, you've wet down your face. So is this some sort of a ritual, post-Hiroshima day? What is this?
Freak out, baby. I'm preparing for the drought, the oncoming political, socio-political drought. My skin is dry in anticipation.
So in other words, you're all wet at the moment.
Yeah, I'm just like the president. I'm all wet. I also have to bring to the listeners today a brief SPAN report, that Stop Police Abuse Now. A couple of little news items that have come to my notice. Yeah.
Nick and I have been two of the chief conspirators for SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, which is a group that was formed in 1990 and has kind of had a sporadic existence. Nick and I were discussing just how real it was last night on the phone, whether it still exists or not. Since Nick still exists and I still exist and Nick's telephone still exists, I have to feel that it does still exist. And I think I'm validated because Nick is here with a report on SPAN. But lest you get too much of a good thing too early in the show, I'm going to play you a little Phil Oakes so that you can sit back and remember how things were 20 years ago in the midst of a potential progressive vision that was sweeping the nation.
We've rammed in your harbor and tied to your port, and our pistols are hungry and our tempers are short. So bring your daughters around to the fort. 'Cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. We pick and choose as we please, boys. Pick and choose as we please. You'd best get down on your knees, boy. Best get down on your knees. We're hairy and horny and ready to track, and we don't care if you're yellow or black. Just take off your clothes and lay down on your back. 'Cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. Our boots are needing a shine, boys. Boots are needing a shine. But our Coca-Cola's fine, boys. Coca-Cola's fine. We've got to protect all our citizens fair. So we'll send a battalion for everyone there. And maybe we'll leave in a couple of years. 'Cause we're the cops of the world, boy. We're the cops of the world. And dump the reds in a pile, boy. Dump the reds in a pile. You'd better wipe off that smile, boy. Better wipe off that smile. We'll spit through the streets of the cities we wreck, and we'll find you a leader that you can elect. Those treaties we signed were a pain in the neck. 'Cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. And clean the Johns with a rag, boys. clean the johns with a rag. If you like, you can use your flag, boys. If you like, you can use your flag. We've got too much money, we're looking for toys. And guns will be guns, and boys will be boys. But we'll gladly pay for all we destroy. 'Cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. Please stay off of the grass, boys. Please stay off of the grass. Here's a kick in the ass, boys. Here's a kick in the ass. We'll smash down your doors, we don't bother to knock. We've done it before, so why all the shock? We're the biggest and the toughest kids on the block. And we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. And when we butchered your sons, boys, when we butchered your sons, have a stick of our gum, boys, have a stick of our bubble gum. We own half the world, oh say can you see, and the name for our profits is democracy. So like it or not, he will have to be free. 'Cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world.
And you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM. Our call-in number is 427-3772, and this is Bathrobes Piers Broadsides with Nutcracker Nick Whitehead.
Hi there, and this is your SPAN report, Stop Police Abuse Now. Summarizing the overall situation, I have found out through insidious circles that a total of 15 complaints have been delivered to the police. That's 15 complaints to the police in the last 2 months or so. I wasn't able to find out the nature of these complaints, so we don't know if any of these are serious or not. That's all I've been able to find out. Next meeting is tonight, isn't it?
No, it's a week from...
Second Tuesday of the month? Oh. Okay, next meeting of the Police Review Commission is next Tuesday at 5 o'clock at City Hall. So I encourage you to go along there and see what happens. A week from Tuesday, that is. Okay, now, I was able to find out in detail about a police abuse incident that may have come to your notice through the press. There's been extensive newspaper coverage on Mr. Daniel Haefeli, who is a former Greenpeace organizer, pacifist, connected with the Resource Center for Nonviolence, well-known guy in the community. And there have been letters in the press. So I called up Dan to get his version of what happened. So here's the story. It's not a tape, it's me relating. Here's a story of what Dan says happened that day, Friday, July 14th, in the parking lot early in the morning at the county building where he was coming to work. Dan tries to park his car in his regular parking lot. He finds that the parking lot is occupied, which is real strange because the parking lot belongs to Henry Mello. It's reserved for Henry Mello, our state senator, or whoever's working for him, like Dan. And so he finds these two real bruisers, real sinister looking guys in a vehicle in the parking lot, and he asks them to leave, explains a little bit of who he is, asks them to get out of there, and
right. And they start arguing with him, and there's some words there. He tries to identify himself, but they don't even seem to be listening at all. Just thoroughly aggressive types. And after a few words, they push him against one of the cars. They pin him down, and they tell him that they're cops. They're undercover cops. Okay, so they don't prove it. He backs off. He backs off, and he goes to park elsewhere. And he's walking away from his car, and they come over to him, and they then pick a fight with him, and again push him over his car. It seems like, wouldn't you say that's intimidation? What would the motive be there?
It's the spirit of 95, I'd say.
Wow. Robert just has a knack of summing these things up so succinctly. Yeah, spirit of 95 indeed. So, needed a little light relief there. I'm sure Dan was feeling pretty uptight.
Is Dan listening to the show this morning?
I don't think so. He's at work. He's the chief aide for Senator Henry Mellow. But this is like a really established citizen who has the respect of hundreds of people in the area as a peace activities organizer. So this time, he absolutely demands that they identify themselves because they were dressed undercover. He thought they looked like drug dealers. The way they were dressed and the way they were acting.
Playing devil's advocate, Nick, what business was it of Dan's to tell these guys not to be there?
Well, because that's his customary parking lot. That parking lot is reserved for him when he comes to work. Or if Senator Henry Mellow's in town, it's reserved for Senator Mellow.
So this is a parking lot or a parking space?
I mean a parking space, yeah. It's a lot of space, rather. Yeah, that's what it was.
But it's apparently not that much space, just enough space for one car.
Yeah, but if you were Henry Mellow, he's no small guy.
That's true. He's well, let's not get into Henry at this time.
Okay, let's go around another route. And so, just to wind this up, they did finally identify themselves as coming out of San Jose, as being involved in the war on drugs in our poor little county, the major drug dealing county, perhaps in their eyes. We're just a holiday resort, man. Leave us alone. Those guys show a big DEA badge. DEA, Drug Enforcement Administration. So I guess that makes it all right to come into this town and push around the aide of our state representative in Sacramento. I guess if you're DEA, you can do stuff like that, huh?
Well, you know, I would love to. I've already suggested this. Call Mello's office and try to see if Dan would be up for an interview on the air. He may well be busy, he may not be, but I think it would be useful to get, I don't know, has he been on any public media, any public radio or television? Has he given his side of the story, do you know, Nick?
I'm not sure. I think he dealt mainly through the newspaper. So I couldn't answer if he's been on any other media. This was a very brief conversation I had with him yesterday. The main thing is, so what Dan did, just to conclude there, Dan told these guys, and this was his mistake, I think, I'm going to go to the media. You guys are in trouble. You know, it's a thing off the top of your head that probably any of us would say, well, don't do it, folks. Don't do it. Because they got to the media before him. Once they knew that their jobs might be on the line because they'd done harm to a key political figure here, they were at the newspaper offices before Dan could get down there, and they had spread this calumny, which is an old word for a bunch of lies, that he had been rough and excited and that he had kicked their car. Well, he swears to me that he hadn't done any of this stuff and that they were the ones who were getting physical and using foul language also. Just out of control.
Do we have any independent witnesses to this situation?
We have one independent witness. I don't know the status of that person, who or what they are. I don't even know if they have any side on this. So that's the trouble. Dan has been trying to see if there was anybody in town who was passing through the parking lot on Friday, July 14th, about 8:30, I think it was. If you know anybody who works in the building, you might want to check with them if they were coming to work at that time and if they might have seen a scuffle or heard some voices. And you should call Dan Haefele at Senator Henry Mello's office if you can help in identifying a witness. So the main effect, Dan was really sad. He has two children. This is the end of his stint with Henry Mello, because Mello is running for lower office, ironically, state assembly. So,
because he can't run.
Right, he can't run three terms as state senator. So Mello is either getting out of politics or he's going to be the next assemblyman, whatever. In any case, Dan is in a position where he's looking for a job. He has two kids to support, and he can't. This has ruined. There's been considerable media play. He did tell me there had been considerable media play on this story, and most of it has taken the side of the DEA agents to the extent of making him look like a stupid, bad oaf, and he thinks it'll harm his reemployment opportunities. He's very upset, and I don't think he wants to get too much involved in fighting it. Not in a public sense, but he has got a lawyer. The thing is, he's being prosecuted. This is the cruelty of it. You know the usual stuff? He's being taken to court and charged with kicking a government car. How about that?
Well, it's interesting. If anyone reads the Santa Cruz Journal, Sentinel, there is an actual letter from one of Dan's friends in the paper this morning. We may be seem to be stacking the deck here, since we don't have the DEA on hand to give its version of events. I've got to admit to a prejudice against the whole existence of the DEA, which I regard as a major obscenity in this country. But this letter, do I have your permission, Nick, to get to kind of interrupt your discussion to give a...
No interruption. Carry on.
Yeah. Very well. This letter is from Chris Kopecky in Watsonville. And he or she writes, "The Sentinel's July 18th article about the assault upon Dan Haefele in the county government center parking lot paints Dan not as a victim but as the aggressor. It was not until the end of the story that it was pointed out, it was not in the headline, that he was slammed up against a car twice, detained, his arms twisted, and subjected to verbal abuse without cause. All the undercover agents had to do was tell Dan that they were on a stakeout and he would have moved to another space. Instead, the casually dressed men did not tell Dan they were police officers and he thought they were in court to face charges. When they told him they were police, they demanded he get out of the car. How could he have moved it? Three cheers for Senator Henry Mello for standing up for Dan Haefele. Senator Mello stands up for any citizen who is wrongly assaulted." I doubt that. "After the CNET fiasco last year when police beat up innocent field workers, we should be more suspicious of undercover federal DEA agents." Again, the letter in today's Santa Cruz County Sentinel from Chris Kopecky of Watsonville. Any comment on that, Nick?
Well, my comment is, thanks, Chris. It's people like you who make citizenship an honorable thing in this country in these trying times. Let's go to Mello. What has Mello's reaction been to this? Dan tells me that Mello is furious. He used that word two or three times in my interview with him. State Senator is furious and is backing Dan, whom he knows to be a real good guy. The supervisors, the Board of Supervisors, all know Dan and are very supportive. And even Bellegarde from South County, who's a former chief of police of Watsonville, has expressly said to Dan that he stands with him on this. Now, here's one of the more amazing things. I don't know how this information came to light, but we have been able to find out that the particular officer involved, the particular DEA officer from San Jose, was suspended at one point. That's his background.
Hi, my name's Robert.
He was suspended.
All right, you know me?
For losing control in the course of his duties, and actually discharging his firearm into the body of a fellow officer during the course of the drug war. Boy, is that out of control. That's incredible, man. Robert's just talking off the air with Dan and seeing if he'd like to come on the air. I think Dan has some reservations about that personally, but maybe. Well, we just heard that Dan may call us back, so he may be willing to address a few words to the listeners on this subject. Some of you may know Dan. I've worked with him at the Resource Center when I was a volunteer there, or a sort of associate of the Resource Center is what I was. Yeah, Dan is going to come on the air. Okay. All right, but you twiddle button.
Hi there. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and we have on the line Dan. Is it Haefeli?
It's Haefeli. That's right.
And Dan, you've been working with State Senator Henry Mello at the county government for a number
right.
of years.
I've been there. I've been here for 2.5 years.
Okay. And you, of course, probably haven't been listening to our show but we've been actually discussing in detail your account through Nick Whitehead.
Right.
Nick, you want to sign in here? Nick is here. Say hello.
Okay.
Hello, Daniel.
Can you hear him?
Yes, I sure can.
Good morning. How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling okay today.
Yeah, I know there's the stress of this situation, but I think you're handling this in a mighty fine way.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that very much. This has never happened to me before, so it's very unusual for me. I'm actually, and I think people know this, a pretty strong supporter of law enforcement, so what happened to me on July 14th was quite a shock.
Would you like to give a kind of a description? You may be repeating some of what we said, but certainly it's more significant coming directly from you. What happened that day?
You know, and I know that that this will probably give my lawyer fits, you know, because he's, you know, informed me that I've got to be very careful. But what everybody knows, or what my account of the story is I pulled into work about 8:30 Friday morning, July 14th. We technically don't start till 9 o'clock, but I had to get in early. I'm usually here early because my boss was going to be on the floor of the Senate, and I wanted to get some material up to him. And I park in a space number 137 at the county building, which is a space that Senator Mello pays for. And when he's here, he uses it, of course, but when he's gone, I use it. It's important to use the parking spaces that are there. So I pulled in, and there was a large Bronco truck, sports vehicle, parked in the space. And I didn't see anybody there, so I pulled up right behind it with the thought that I would find out who was there, and if nobody was there, I would call and find out who was there so we could exchange parking spaces. Mm-hmm. At that point, a gentleman jumped out of the car with a cell phone. He yelled over to me that he was on business. So I assumed that this is somebody on a court date, so I called over to him, my engine was on, that I needed to park there. This was my parking space, and I would pull back so he could pull out. So I pulled back, and I waited for, I believe it was a couple of minutes, and he didn't pull out, so I pulled back behind him. At that point, he came running over to the door of my car, waved a police badge, and said, "I'm a San Jose police officer. Get out of the car. You have hit my car." I said, "Well, I don't think I hit your car. I am an aide to Senator Mello. This is my parking space." And at that point, he again yelled at me to get out of the car and show him some ID. So I got out of the car. We started talking. He was very excited. He and another gentleman who was standing nearby came over. These are very large people. They grabbed me and slammed me up against the car on the other side of the parking lot and informed me that I needed to get out of there. So at that point I said, "Look, I need to get to work, that's my parking space, contact me when you're done." And that's the basis upon which they're citing me. They say that I blocked their vehicle. But at that point, I had been told to get out of the car and I was scared. These are two very large gentlemen. Mm-hmm. So I started walking towards the county building and they grabbed my briefcase, they grabbed my coffee thermos, and slammed me up against a car. Another vehicle this time, twisted my arms behind me. They had done that the first time, too. And it was very painful. I've never had that happen to me before, where they twist your arms behind you and practically turn them all the way around. So here I am eating the hood of a car. At that point, two sheriff bailiffs came running over and saw what was going on. One of the gentlemen grabbed a pair of handcuffs from one of them and cuffed me and started screaming in my ear, and he he grabbed a card from his wallet and yelled that he was a DEA agent, and now I was in big trouble now because he was a DEA agent and I was going to be arrested and thrown in jail.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, I'm wondering, why is this happening to me?
Maybe he was on drugs.
What's that?
Maybe he was on drugs.
I don't know. I mean, you know, in my mind, I mean, I was in a hurry to get to work, but, you know, these guys were, you know, my knowledge of law enforcement, I know that locally the word is that you defuse situations. I'm not a violent person. I'm not a bully. I think that if I had been upset or had been angry, I would have, could have easily been defused, but this was a situation that clearly escalated. So I was cited for delaying a police officer, and here I am. And I wasn't going to go to the press and talk about this situation, even though my arms hurt and I could barely move over the weekend. But the Drug Enforcement Administration, who was supervising these two undercover San Jose police officers, apparently leaked this story to the local newspapers, who printed an account that said that I hit their car, that I knowingly blocked their vehicle, that they told me they were police officers and I ignored them. None of this is true, which I'm very upset about because I worked hard in the last 18 years in this community to be honest and to do, you know, save the bay and
establish a good reputation.
Yeah, and not just to do that, but to do good things in the community. And, you know, having
your ability to do that will be compromised if this charge holds up.
Yeah, and it's already been. I mean, here I've been slammed in the newspapers for doing nothing wrong, and I think it's very unfair, and I'm very frustrated because I can't really say or do much about it except tell the truth, and I continue to do that as people ask me. People who know me know that I don't go hitting cars. I mean, I just don't do that. Why would I go hit a car, my little Toyota truck against this big Bronco? Why would I do that? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, and usually the police, as a person who's seen literally dozens of arrests, and some of them by the Santa Cruz police, it's frequently the case that the police, when they're in the wrong, will lamentably fabricate charges to justify what they do.
Yeah.
Power sometimes corrupts.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, again, this is, you know, I know many people in local law enforcement, and they're very good people. Almost everybody, especially in the Sheriff's Department, I have a lot of trust and faith in. These gentlemen from over the hill who are on some kind of DEA operation, I don't know what they were doing there. I later found out that they claimed they were on surveillance and that was an undercover seized vehicle. You know, it just astounds me that somebody who told them he was a government employee in a government parking lot that they would do this. Now, I understand that when nobody's around, like the CNET video, they went after people who were basically innocent people, and since they thought nobody was around, they really went after these people and hit them pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like the Rodney King case. It astounds me that they would do this in full daylight in front of people. There apparently were witnesses. You know, there is a police investigation, an internal affairs investigation of the officers. I don't have a lot of trust at this point, given what I've seen, especially since the DEA is involved, that the police investigation is going to be very, you know, balanced. I think it's going to be one-sided. I think the police are going to say their officers acted correctly.
This IA investigation is out of San Jose, or?
Yeah, and it's the DEA is involved with it.
Have you thought of filing a complaint with State Attorney General on this issue? Or?
I may. I'm going to wait and see what happens with the police investigation. I do want to let the investigation proceed. Senator Mello, you know, wrote to the police chief, you know, demanding a fair investigation. He felt this was wrong. I mean, what would happen if it had been him, you know, in his old pickup truck, or if it had been you, or anybody, you know, showing up to park in their space and this happened to them?
What was the reaction of the bailiffs? Did they immediately support the DEA? Did they support you? What was their...
At that point, I really wasn't focused on what was going on. The Santa Cruz police showed up at some point, too, and they're the ones who provide the citation. I was more focused on the fact that my arms were twisted around, and my face was down in a car, and I didn't really pay attention to the interactions around me. I know that when I was uncuffed, there were probably three DEA agents, a couple of sheriffs, a couple of Santa Cruz police, a couple of police cars. It just seemed like a scene out of, you know, some police show or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't really focused at that point on, you know, what the interactions were between the different police officers.
Any witnesses to this, independent witnesses?
There are a couple, and the investigation has contacted them.
Would you like to give out a number on the air for people to give you a call if they did see something?
Oh, yes. If anybody has seen anything, if this was in the judge's parking lot in the county government center, the one closest to Water and Ocean Street, the morning of July 14th, I was driving a silver Toyota pickup truck. My phone number here is 454-3108, mm-hmm. and I am... You know, I'm in a government office right now. I'm on break right now. I'm on my lunch hours. I'm talking to you. But if you call and say it's about that, I'll take a break and talk to you. I don't want to do that while on state time doing my job. But if anybody did see anything, appreciate it.
What specific hours could people call you, Dan?
You could call me between noon and 1, which is lunch hour. Or you can call me anytime, and I'll take a break and talk to you.
Do you want to give out your attorney's number so they can call that your attorney as well, or do you want to do that when you talk to them?
I don't want to really do that. Why don't you know, when people call, why don't you call here first,
sure.
And I'll go ahead and handle that.
Now, do you have a court date coming up that people, your supporters, could attend?
At this point, there's a tentative court date of August 15th, but I'm not sure. The district attorney has not filed charges yet, so I'm not sure that date's real valid.
Is there any way people can confirm or deny this, that there will be, I guess you can you get this information out, in other words, a day or two in advance in the event that you are going to court so supporters can show up?
Yeah, I would do that. If it goes to court, I would definitely do that.
And how can people find out about it? I guess by giving you a call?
Yeah.
Do give me a call at 423-HUFF.
423-HUFF.
Right, and I will broadcast it on my show, which will be the... Let's see, I have a show on the 11th every Monday and Friday from 10 to 12 is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, which is the show you're on right now.
Okay.
The other question is, what about the Sentinel's article? Where did they err, and what's been your experience with the Santa Cruz County Sentinel?
Well, it's interesting because it's been a good, you know, in terms of my work in the past, Save Our Shores and other things, Sentinel's been a very fair newspaper. I always thought they were very fair. And my problem with the story that appeared is they really emphasized the DEA's version of events, which is false. They really de-emphasized my story. They left, you know, they only gave little pieces of my account, and I gave my account in detail to the reporters. So I, you know, plus they ran the headline saying I was cited and sort of made me out to be a criminal, which I thought was really unfair because I am not. I've never been in trouble with the law before. You know, I've never had a situation like this. I mean, I've had a couple of parking tickets and, you know, maybe a speeding ticket or two, you know, going to Los Angeles, but I've never been, you know, in this level of, you know, this has never happened. And, you know, because I'm a public figure somewhat, the Sentinel story, I think, was really unfortunate, mm-hmm. and it makes it very difficult.
Offered you an opportunity to reply, or?
I wrote, there was one gentleman who wrote a letter to the editor that was negative on me, and he was a gentleman who's never liked much what I do or my politics, so I responded to his letter specifically.
And they will print that?
They did print that at the end of August. I forget the date right now.
End of July.
My letter. Yeah.
There was also a letter in today's Sentinel about your bike from Chris Kopecky.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a teacher out in Watsonville, and she contacted me after this event, or after she heard about it, and asked me what was going on, and she, you know, was very distressed about the article.
We read that letter on the air, and, do you know the names of these officers who cited you?
I don't.
Because it's interesting that you should be the subject of such notoriety, and the individuals who apparently, if your account is to be believed, and I frankly believe it,
mm-hmm.
You know, are able to simply be able to wander around anonymously as DEA agents, when in fact, if they're citing you, they have to take responsibility as agents for what they do.
Right.
Particularly when what they're doing is not in the line of duty at all, it sounds like, but simply in the line of a form of personal power
mm-hmm.
that they're using through the cover of their office.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I would like, and I think that also, frankly, I have a somewhat broader agenda, and I don't know that you share it.
Yeah.
And that I feel the DEA itself, as an organization, is an illegitimate organization, but certainly they're, when agents are acting in the way that you describe, they are acting inappropriately.
Yeah, this is all new to me because I've, you know, never encountered this kind of situation before, and I had never really had much of a view of the DEA. I did have a strongly favorable view of local law enforcement, but this is all just brand new to me. And, you know, law enforcement's never been an issue. I've staffed law enforcement issues here for Senator Mello, but, you know, to me, I'm still sort of, at this point, sort of reeling over how this could happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's sort of where I'm at with it at this point.
Well, do give me a call on Friday, or at the very latest, I guess on Monday, it'll be the 11th, 12th, 13th, or 14th. You'll be going in on Tuesday if you do go in. And you know, have you ever been arraigned before for a misdemeanor? I take it there.
No.
The procedure usually is, if you're going in with your attorney, it won't take you very long. Your attorney just steps up and asks to see the, you know, that your case be taken first. And unlike other people who don't have attorneys and have to sit for, you know, essentially a couple hours, you will simply be asked to enter a plea, and your attorney can decide whether he's going to demur, whether he's going to say guilty, not guilty, or no contest, and they'll give you another court date. And that's what's going to happen there. And I would encourage people who are around on Tuesday to tune into the show on Monday to hear if, in fact, Dan is going to have to run the gauntlet in court for what appears to be a situation where other people should be running the gauntlet, because I suspect if they acted this way toward you, they may well have acted this way toward others.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure if that's the case. I mean, to me, this was an isolated incident. Maybe it isn't. You know, I mean, I'm starting to get more of a sense, the more we hear about these things, that this is not an unusual case.
No, unfortunately, when you give power to the police in this kind of a capacity, and there's a huge amount of power and money that stems from the drug industry and the criminalization of the drug industry, you get individuals who feel that